Welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And I'm joined by the man in a slightly different recording location tonight. His name would be Dirt, a.k.a. at PCN underscore Dirt on Twitter.
Hi, Mom. Thanks for coming to my show.
From the confines of his nice space heater.
That's right. I'm sitting on a heater right now. Trying to keep warm.
And we also have at agent underscore 70.
What's up, everybody?
And I'm, of course, at Tim DOGG98 and also at the Click Nation. And Roddy Cat. At Roddy Cat is not here tonight, but hopefully he's watching at home, giving us moral support. And, of course, you can go to theclicknation.com to find all previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Let's see. Follow the Twitter account at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google Plus. Just search for The Click Nation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Just search for The Click Nation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheClickNation. And if you ever have any email you want to have read on a future show, you can send that on over to TheClickNation@gmail.com. And I'd like to remind you that we record live every Thursday night around 9 o'clock, even though tonight is 9:30. But mostly every night, every week it's 9 o'clock Eastern Time on Thursdays.
And we be on the lookout tonight for, you know, updates on Twitter and on the Click Nation website if there is a change to the time.
Yes. That's why you should be following us on social media accounts so you can stay abreast. And tonight we're recording on January 23rd, 2014. And let's see what comic book news we have for this week. I think the news was slow this week. Actually, I remember some stuff popping up today that I saw, but I don't think I had time to put it to our nice, handy document. But, of course, on the Friday after last week's episode, I believe DC announced that Lex Luthor would be joining the Justice League on issue 30 that comes out in April.
The aftermath of Forever Evil.
Yep. The joys of 3 month ahead solicits all storylines. And I think they also said that Ted Kord will be appearing in the pages of Justice League. And, oh yeah, Captain Cold is also going to be a member. And going off the top of my head, the revamped roster, at least from the cover, has Luthor, Batman, Wonder Woman, Captain Cold, Luthor, if I didn't say him before, and Shazam, and Cyborg. So what are our thoughts?
It's an interesting lineup, that's all I can say.
Like, I could see how Luthor and Captain Cold can kind of fold into it with what they're doing with Forever Evil and, right. And the tie-ins, so... like, I was just thinking today, I was reading the Forever Evil tie-in books from last week and the week before, and I was just kind of thinking, like, they're actually trying to give, like, the rogues some honor and some mm-hmm. dignity, even though they are villains. And I was thinking, that's kind of interesting. I wonder what they're going to do. And then, okay, yeah, so they're joining – Captain Cold's joining Justice League. I can kind of see how that – how it's going that way. So I'm actually looking forward to see how all this plays out.
Yes.
They're all making face turns. You know, we're going to
like
some wrestling terminology.
It's like the Attitude Era.
Right.
You know, the Stone Cold Steve Austin against authority is the good guy.
That's right.
Hulk Hogan had to turn into Hollywood Hulk Hogan. And then fans started cheering him because he wasn't a bland baby face.
And then he turned good again. And then he turned bad again. And then he turned good again.
They went back to the feather boa red and yellow.
And then he went to TNA, and then he left TNA, and now he's going back to WWE.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh,
WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, WrestleMania is the time when they all come back.
Yeah, well, it sounds like Hogan is going to be inducting Warrior into the Hall of Fame this year.
Oh.
No kidding.
And wow. Also don't forget that Hulk Hogan made the sex tape.
What's that?
Never forget.
Never remember.
Never remember what?
Hogan sets tape.
Oh, can we not? Anyway. Moving on.
Let's see, Batman versus Superman, Man of Steel sequel, whatever it's being called. It's going to be pushed back to May of 2016.
Which is probably a good article, thing. I saw an article today that was stressing how this is a good thing for the movie because the more time they take, the better the product should be. Knock on wood. So, you know, that's the best they can hope for is that the more time they take, the better product they can produce. But, you know,
did that work for G.I. Joe Retaliation?
Nope.
You know, it's funny when G.I. Joe Retaliation came out, by the time it came out, I totally forgot that it had got delayed.
Pushed back.
3D. Yeah.
I have such low hopes for Superman versus Batman anyway that at this point I don't even care, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
He's got low hopes.
The makings of a new parody song right there. That's a good one. That's a good one.
All right, what are the news?
Lady Sif is set to appear on an episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That was pretty awesome to hear.
I don't know if I'm really excited about that.
I am, you know.
Depending on what she does.
Well, Jamie Alexander is pretty hot, so I you know, I'm happy to see her in any, you know, in any form. So, you know, she'd be a welcome addition. And, you know, to a certain extent, this is definitely playing to the fanboys who were, you know, looking for more movie actor crossover into the show. So this plays right, you know, this plays right to them.
Or at least more Marvel Universe tie into the show.
Right. I mean, you know what it is? They definitely still tie into the Marvel Universe, but they don't have the overt movie tie-ins. This is an overt movie tie-in. And it's probably going to be time to coincide with the Blu-ray, the DVD release of Thor: The Dark World.
Which I still haven't seen.
Just watch it. It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. I enjoyed it. It's very the best thing I can say about any of these movies is that it was entertaining. And it was definitely entertaining.
I know I saw earlier, sometime today, that it was announced that Deathlok will be making an appearance on the show.
No kidding.
I think that's what they're setting up the black guy to be.
Really? Wow.
I missed the episode when they came back from the fall break, but supposedly he got really injured. And
yes.
So.
Spoilers.
Weird. Yeah.
No kidding. So that's the plan? That's actually not a bad thing. You know, this might be a way to reboot Deathlok too.
That's the type of characters they need to be using on the TV show. People like Deathlok who never be in a movie.
Sure. That's actually pretty cool. I like that development. That is good news.
So that's all the news we have written down.
Well, there's a bit of news I saw go up late in the day. Marvel's Ant-Man is taking the calendar, the release date that Man of Steel, that the sequel with Batman and Wonder Woman had originally been scheduled for in July of 2015. And the Ant-Man movie has been pushed to that date. So we'll be seeing Paul Rudd as probably Scott Lang. in the new Ant-Man movie in July 2015.
Yep. That's not really much to really say there. They're just taking advantage of an open slot.
Hey, that's a good, you know, that's what you got to do. Is there anything else that hit today news-wise? Anybody?
Nah.
Cool.
The one thing I wanted to mention is that I had lamented when Valiant relaunched that they didn't have the books that I was really a fan of.
Right, Magnus, Solar.
Right. And Dynamite has gotten the deal on those, and they picked those up. And apparently, Dynamite, they picked up the license from Dark Horse. I guess Dark Horse dropped it, so Dynamite picked it up. And Dynamite has decided that they are doing those books basically as Valiant continuations, not as the old Dell Gold Key continuations like Dark Horse had done. So they are doing them. I guess the best way to say it is that they are doing them in their mind how Valiant would be doing them today if Valiant had the license.
Gotcha.
And why would they do it like that?
Maybe they want to be friends. I don't know. Maybe they just think it's better to go with that more modern type approach than trying to, you know, key in the old readers from the 60s. And
right. I was going to say, as modern as the mid-90s is nowadays.
But Fred Van Lente, who is working on Archer and Armstrong doing Magnus Robot Fighter, Greg Pak, who's working on Eternal Warrior, is doing Turok Dinosaur Hunter. Bart Sears, who is currently working on Bloodshot, worked on Exo Manowar and Turok during the old Valiant days, is working in Turok. Tom Fowler, who's currently working on Quantum and Woody, is doing covers. Bob Layton, who worked at Valiant in the 90s, is doing covers. The cover of Turok number one is basically a riff on the Turok number one from Valiant in the 90s, done by Bart Sears a couple times.
Yes.
So Dynamite is also doing pull box cover variants, just like Valiant is currently doing with subscriptions. Let's see. There was something else.
So maybe that's why they're following Valiant, because they're copying and doing the same things they're doing in their current comics.
Yeah, and so they're basically, you know, they can't interact with those other characters, but it just sounds like they're trying to make them feel as if they are interconnected, and they're probably, you know, trying to beg with Valiant to make them somehow interconnected. I saw a, I guess it was a 5-page preview for Magnus Robot Fighter, and I have to say I'm actually really looking forward to that book now.
Yeah, I actually want to read those.
I was kind of like iffy on Magnus, but Solar is one of my favorite characters, so I'm always looking forward to that. But Magnus, I wasn't too sure if I was going to read it or not. But from what I saw in the preview, I'm really looking forward to it now.
If Fred Van Lente is writing it, I definitely want to read it. The only one of those characters I actually remember from my childhood is Turok, because he had a video game, right?
Yeah, he had a couple. Yeah,
in 64.
And they did one on was it PlayStation 3 and 360 a couple years ago.
Yeah, if we happen to get review copies of those, let me know. All right. Any other news? Go on. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Short Story Time by Dirt.
It is?
From whichever Melzer you.
Oh.
What?
Okay, so Tim and I have had this running gag going on between us for a while, because there's a pro wrestling writer named Dave Meltzer, and there's a novelist and comic book writer named Brad Meltzer.
Right.
And so every time I mention Brad Meltzer, Tim's always like, oh, isn't that the pro wrestling guy? And anytime I mention Dave Meltzer, he's like, oh, the guy who wrote Infinity Crisis,
yes. You know, whatever. Yeah, whatever Crisis. That was.
Yeah.
Was it Identity Crisis?
Yeah, I think it was Identity Crisis. So, so anyway, I sent out this, like, you know, tweet, you know, Facebook post, whatever, saying that I was squealing like a 12-year-old schoolgirl, giggly little schoolgirl, because Brad Meltzer had actually responded to one of my emails, and he had laughed in this email at my joke. And the joke was stupid. Like, it's not even a funny joke. But still, I got the email laugh. I got the H-A exclamation point ha in an email from this guy. So I was like, he read my email and responded. But it's funny. How this basically worked out is, I'm on a whole bunch of mailing lists. I get a whole bunch of press releases and everything like that. And the Brad Meltzer press releases, whenever he's doing a novel or a kid's book or a comic or anything like that, they're always written like a letter. Like, it's always like, hey, guys, I just wanted to drop you a line, let you know that my new novel's coming out, you know, whatever. And it's always very friendly. It's very conversational. It always has something like, hey, copy and paste this, you know, tweet it out, post it on Facebook that says my friend Brad is coming out with a new book, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I realized one day that these press releases are actually originating from a Gmail address. Like, it's just a standard Gmail address that they're coming from, and then they're being sent out on these press release lists. So he sent out this press release. He has a new kids book coming out. He talks about, you know, how he loves writing a kids book. This is for his kids. He hopes, you know, you'll enjoy it. You'll share it with all the kids that you know and everything like that. So I responded back to the original Gmail address, and I just said, hey, can I share this with adults who think and act like kids? Because I know a lot of them. And sure enough, I get this response back from the Gmail address that just says, you know, it's got the ha. It's like, I know a lot of people like that too. It's, you know, this is something that, you know, everybody can enjoy, even the kids in our lives who have jobs and drive cars, whatever. I don't know. But still, he responded to it, and it just had the signature at the bottom. It just had a line and B. And, you know, like a hyphen B. That's how he signs his stuff, Brad Meltzer, hyphen B. So I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, I got an actual personal response with the ha in it, you know. And it had an emoticon or emoji or whatever you're supposed to call it. It had the colon parentheses, so it looked like the little smiley face.
You went so, fanboy.
Yeah.
You totally went fanboy.
Totally. The giggly 12-year-old schoolgirl. So there you go.
And you all were entertained.
That was it. That was the whole story. And so, of course, Tim's like, okay, you made that public, so now you got to share it on the show.
Yep. The guy that runs Dirt Sheets responded to your email.
Oh, I've talked to that guy before, too. Yeah, I talked to both of them.
Cool.
But now I know Brad Meltzer's personal email address. So.
And now I know Brad Meltzer did one of those DC event books that I always forget and confuse with one another.
He did the one where Elongated Man's wife died.
Mm-hmm.
They found out Dr. Light had violated her. He did that story.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I know there's like Infinity Crisis.
That's Identity Crisis.
Yeah.
Which one? Oh, did anyone have Infinity, or is that just the Marvel one I'm thinking of?
They did Infinite Crisis. Grant Morrison did Infinite Crisis like 2 years later.
There you go. That's two. Yeah, I don't know. Infinite, Identity,
Everything's Identity a Crisis.
Crisis on.
Can we not go down this road, please?
Identity was also the one where Robin's dad got killed.
Yes.
Tim Drake's dad was killed by Captain Boomerang's son, I guess. So,
Captain Boomerang's got a son.
Well, New 52, I don't think so. I don't think there's a daddy Boomerang. I think there's just the one Boomerang now.
This is the same company that has a guy named Firestorm, and none of his powers have nothing to do with fire.
But he could create fire.
Why is his head on fire?
Oh, Lord, can we not go down this road?
Moving on.
Mercy.
Agent 70, why don't you start us off with one of your picks?
Right. So,
hey, Cyclops has two eyes. I just want to point that out.
So what did I read this week? I actually got quite a bit of reading in this week on the daily commute. I was able to read, what am I going to talk? Probably what's most fresh in my mind is All New Invaders number 1. I read that prior to getting on, you know, coming online. And I actually liked it. It was a nice lead into the story. You didn't really need to know that much. Who was the creative team on this? It's I know Steve Pugh is the artist. James Robinson is doing the story. I thought the setup was pretty well done. If I'm not mistaken, they set this up in the all new Marvel Now .1 issue. If I'm not mistaken. And
.1, I don't know.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, that they did do this, and basically I don't want to go too far into it, but the premise, well, the book basically is from Jim Hammond, the original Human Torch's point of view, and it follows him post Secret Avengers, you know, when he was basically part of that all robot effort to try to take over the world. So it follows up on where Jim Hammond has been and what kind of draws together the original Invaders team of the original Human Torch, Namor the Submariner, Bucky, now the Winter Soldier, and Captain America, of course. And I thought it was a pretty effective first issue. You didn't necessarily need to know that much Marvel history, but it definitely helped to know it. What else can I say about this? I thought the art was pretty good. I think there's a couple of books this week that that I thought the art was very much complementary and enhanced the story of a couple of books that were brand new launches. I'll get to another book that I'm about to put on my list as I finish skimming it. Hopefully while we're still on the show, while we're still broadcasting. But I can definitely say that Invaders number one, all new Invaders number one, is worth a read if you're looking for something new to pick up.
And you can read my review of it on theclicknation.com.
Do you have anything to add, Tim?
Network.com.
Do you have anything to add?
I did like Steve Pugh. Is it Pugh?
Yes. Pug? Pugh? I think it's Pugh.
Pugh's art. There were a couple instances where I kind of got a Greg Land vibe from it. But not
definitely not. I was about to say not as
some of the faces. Some of the faces, at least Hammond's face, Jim Hammond's face, looked kind of very human-like.
Oh, okay. Well, the thing is, my thing with Greg Land is that he just takes from photos, so you could just see that it's a photo that he just found somewhere, you know?
Yeah. And what else? I thought it was okay issued. They, you know. The Human Torch was the main focus of the book. You saw glimpses of the other invaders, which could be seen as a good or a bad thing. People reading the book, they're jumping on the book for the first time. They might expect to see, you know, Captain America featured, but he really wasn't. That's about the only other things I'd add to the review.
Okay.
All right.
Dirt, I guess you didn't read it.
Nope.
All right.
I mean, I've got it. I mean, I could read it. I just don't know. You know, it's not at the top of my list.
Got it. All right. Your turn, then.
Who, me?
Yes.
All right, then. Let's go to, if I can find the cover. Here we go. Superior Spider-Man Team Up, number 9.
Ooh.
Which, amazingly enough, is a book you kind of need to read if you're reading Superior Spider-Man.
No kidding.
This ties directly into the Goblin Nation storyline.
Oh.
Or the Goblin War or whatever it's called. This is actually the setup for it.
No kidding. Like, so this is a direct tie-in.
Yeah, this gets the ball rolling.
Wow.
And it's funny because in our store, you know, Superior Spider-Man Team-Up has about, I want to say, a fourth of the readers of regular Superior Spider-Man.
Sure.
So I think...
Understandable, too.
Yeah, yeah. So I think this is going to be one of those, like, in a week, everyone's going to realize that they need a copy of this, you know? Like it's going to be disappearing off the shelves. It's much lower ordered than the rest, but Basically, Punisher and Daredevil basically grab the attention of Spider-Man, and they just say, you know, look, something's wrong in the city. Like, we can tell that there's something going on. Things are starting to heat up. We can't tell exactly what the problem is, but, you know, we can tell that there's this undercurrent of something building, you know, within the city. And so he takes them back to Spider Island, and you find out that Goblin has actually dropped an agent into the Spider Army, whatever Superior Spider-Man's people are called, I forget. But yeah, his private force, there's an undercover agent working for the Goblin there, and he's stealing a bunch of the old weapons that Spider-Man has confiscated. So some of the old Goblin gliders are missing, Vulture's wings. And so at first you think, and pumpkin bombs, stuff like this, and you think that it's going to be going for like the Sinister Six, you know, like they're getting their weapons back, whatever. But instead, right, you're finding out that he's actually planning on using these to arm his people. Like, whatever war this is that he's planning is actually going to be an all-out war, an actual war. He's getting weapons. He's getting armament. And, you know, not to give everything away, the end of the book definitely shifts the balance of power for Superior Spider-Man, where, you know, it seems like he has everything laid out. He's got everything worked out. He knows what's going to happen. But this double agent who's infiltrated has shifted the balance of power, and now everything looks really bad for Spider-Man, Punisher, and Daredevil, because they are the New York on the street vigilante, you know, superheroes, and they're the ones that are going to feel the brunt of this, and now they find themselves right in the middle of it.
Very interesting.
And there's a note at the end that says this issue takes place between issues 26 and 27 of Superior Spider-Man.
Okay.
So I was, you know, I usually read Superior Spider-Man team up just because I like the character, you know, but most of the time it's not like a go-to book, or right, it's not anything that I really worry about that much. But I didn't get a chance to read a whole lot of stuff this week, and I made sure I wanted to read, you know, this one. And I was really kind of surprised by how important it was.
Integral.
It felt.
It's an integral part of the story now. You may want to put up a sign that says, you know, like underneath where the book is displayed in your store, guess what? This is a prelude or an important chapter in, what is it, the Goblin War or whatever they're calling it? Pick it up. Before it's gone.
Goblin Nation.
Yeah, Goblin Nation. There you go. Put up a sign.
And I will point out that it's a different writer on there, I see.
Yeah, Schnick. Whoever, let's see here. It's Kevin Schnick.
You got me?
I like how you mentioned that you usually pick this up to read pretty early, just because you're a fan of Superior Spider-Man. Because I know every time there's a new Superior Spider-Man issue out, I'm always that's usually one of the first books I read. But then Superior Spider-Man Team Up, I never really rushed to read that one. So
same.
Yeah, it always felt like it's just kind of they want another book with his name on it, so they make this other book that's just kind of, you know, the non-integral stories. It's
right,
you know, just him, and because it's called Team Up. You know, it's like him and some other random character, and it's just to show how he interacts with other parts of the Marvel Universe. But I really liked how this played out. I was really impressed by the story.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with this book once Superior goes away, if it stays away, and Amazing relaunches.
Maybe it'll go back to being Marvel Team-Up.
Well, there's still no official word on whether or not Superior is staying or going away once Amazing comes back.
Right.
And I kind of feel like they're going to change the title, you know, somehow the character. I just don't know.
Get rid of Doc. He's become too popular as a Spider-Man, put it that way.
Yeah.
There'll be some kind of twist.
I don't know. I'm definitely intrigued for it. I want to see what happens, you know. But if they cancel Superior and get rid of Doc for whatever reason, just put like Peter back in his brain and that becomes amazing, I'm going to stop reading. And I'll hold firm to that for about 2 issues.
We shall see.
All right, what's next?
I'll go next. I'm going to mention Justice League number 27.
I read that.
Yep. It was actually the last comic I read before we started the show. Read it about 2 or 3 hours ago. And this deals with, of course, this is a Forever Evil tie-in. And it mostly deals with Cyborg getting back in the game.
Getting reinvented,
basically. Yeah, Cyborg 2.0.
He's leaner, actually, he's faster, he's meaner.
Yep, and actually makes sense because he gets himself a new body.
Yeah, I knew that they were going to redesign Cyborg at some point. I just, you know, I was waiting for a good excuse, you know, as to why it would happen. And, of course, Forever Evil gives them that good excuse by separating Victor from his android body. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the character of him and his father, the way their character interaction was and the way that they kind of, you know, reconciled and, you know, you see their motivations and their history and things like that. I thought it was a good character piece for Cyborg.
Yes, it was. And we saw some other,
agreed,
some other DC characters make an appearance. Won't say who.
The new Doom Patrol.
Who I know nothing about. So I
may have just gotten killed. So.
Well, the Doom Patrol in the new 52 hasn't been, as far as I know, this is the first time Doom Patrol has shown up as a name in the new 52. So whatever incarnation that we see here, it's as far as I know, there's no history. So they can do whatever they want.
Were those existing characters?
No, I don't recognize
from pre 52.
Not that I recognize.
Oh, okay. So
I remember the old Doom Patrol, but not.
What's like the what was the purpose of the Doom Patrol team or comic?
Gosh,
you DC people need to educate me.
I remember Doom Patrol being was like, you know, that's where they got one of the characters. That's where they got Beast Boy. You know,
really?
He was originally called Changeling, and you know, that's the New Teen Titans from the early 80s drew heavily upon some of the stories of the Doom Patrol because you know, one of the members, you know, Changeling / Beast Boy came from that. So that was my introduction to the Doom Patrol. I was not very familiar with them growing up until then.
I remember there being a big debate for a long time that Marvel had stolen the Doom Patrol to create the X-Men. Because basically the idea of the Doom Patrol is you had this wise old man in a wheelchair.
Right.
And he had this group of superpowered freaks who were alienated from society, who he was training to help humanity in the hopes that they'd be able to, you know, kind of bridge the freak gap and make society, you know, accept them. And this book came out like, I want to say the original Doom Patrol 1 came out like 6 months before X-Men number 1. So it was one of those things where Doom Patrol comes out and then X-Men comes out several months later with a very similar, you know, kind of setup,
mm-hmm,
to them. But, I mean, it was basically just people who they had superpowers or they had – like one guy was trapped inside an android body. So they were all – like they couldn't fit with humanity anymore. So they were outcasts and they weren't sure what their place in the world was, and this, you know, wise old man took them under their wing and was teaching them how to use their powers and how to be a force of good and how to, you know, respect humanity and work alongside it, even though humanity didn't respect them. And it just seemed like a lot of the same stuff that was going on in X-Men, but for whatever reason, X-Men took off and Doom Patrol didn't.
I think they had better characters.
Maybe.
You know, it's pretty simple.
Well, they didn't have hot chicks like Jean Grey.
No.
Marvel did it better.
So anyway. But yeah, so Justice League 27, I sat down to read 27 and realized I never read 26 because it came out on Christmas. So right. I actually sat down and read them back to back. So I'm having a hard time like separating one book from the other inside my mind. But I enjoyed the look at Cyborg. And I think if anybody, like, I know when the new 52 launched, they said Cyborg was going to be a part of Justice League. A lot of people, like, they didn't understand how he'd fit. Like, they understood Aquaman, they understood Green Lantern, of course, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, but Cyborg seemed kind of like the odd man out.
He was super friend.
For one series, but not in the five others. But I think this issue, if nothing else, like, his original origin issue was okay, but I don't think his original origin story like really made you care that much about him. I mean, he was a guy with a tough life, but you know, who cares? But I think this issue does a much better job of connecting you with the character and making you, you know, making you care that he's a superhero.
His origin in the first, what, five or whatever issues of Justice League, I mean, everything kind of happened to him so fast. You didn't get a chance to really feel for him.
Yeah, it didn't really have a lot of weight to it. There wasn't really any depth or heart. It was just, you know, hey, this sucks. Well, quick, make me a robot so I don't die, you know. Whereas in this one's much more about the choice of becoming a hero and continuing to sacrifice yourself.
Yep. I definitely dug it.
Yep.
It was okay. It was okay. I definitely, out of the three of us, obviously I'm the one that's familiar with the original Cyborg origin. So it's, you know, it's sort of, treading on familiar territory for me, especially with reconciling with his father. It's a very similar, it was done in a very similar fashion. In if I recall correctly, in the old New Teen Titans. So. As oxymoronic as that sounds.
Okay, your turn, Agent 70.
All right. I was just looking at my list of books, and one of the books I probably enjoyed the most because there was a lot. There seemed to be a lot moving. The story that was that had been kind of percolating in the book forward, there was a lot of movement in this particular story. It was Captain America number 15, where we get a much bigger a much more detailed view of the Iron Nail, who is a new antagonist in the Captain America books. We also see the appearance of, spoiler alert, someone who, for us G.I. Joe fans, when you hear the name, just, you know, brings back maybe some kind of wacky memories. Because now Remender's introduced a character named...
Sergeant Slaughter?
No.
Oh.
Serpentor.
William Globulus. Perry.
No. This guy, his name is Dr. Mind Bubble. Like, really, Remender? Yeah. You sure that's not Dr. Mindbender, really? So
I'm hoping by the time I get to this, I'll enjoy it because the Captain America book is one of the ones I've been contemplating stopping reading.
Really?
Like him, Captain America, Iron Man. I definitely stopped reading Iron Man already. Yeah, but I was like, why am I reading this?
There was actually some pretty well written parts to this issue. I thought they did a lot of kind of a slow developing story with Nuke, and kind of, you know, calming him down, because we know Nuke as, you know, pop this pill, you know, we're gonna fight for our boys, you know, you killed our boys. That is the Nuke that we have seen in you know, from Daredevil to Origin to you know, appearances here and there in the Marvel Universe, and this is probably the deepest exploration of Nuke's character we've had. And no, you know, and no spoilers, but you know, something does happen to Nuke in this issue. You know, you just have to read it and find out. But I definitely enjoyed this book because, like I said, it moves the story that's been percolating in Cap forward, you know, by leaps and bounds. So if you want to jump on, this isn't the worst place to jump on, to be perfectly honest. I think you do need to have read the previous issue before reading this one. But if what you do is read, I guess, the first few issues of this most recent arc, I'm not sure. I think this is the second issue, so maybe you just need to read 14 before reading this one. I enjoyed it, but like I said, it seemed like it was moving the story along finally, and you know, I was glad for that.
Is the whole like Dimension Z thing, whatever, like still reverberating, or is that pretty much over and done and forgotten?
No, it's reverberating because the cover for the next issue involves Jet Black, the character that comes over from Dimension Z with Cap.
Oh, she gets a issue focused on herself.
No, she at least gets a cover. So, you know, she's definitely going to be a guest. She's going to be a major character in the book going forward. She does not make, no spoiler alert, she does not make an appearance in this book, but she's definitely on the cover for the next issue. At least as per the, you know, the advertisement at the back of the book.
Do they make him act like he's older since he aged? Like 10 years or whatever.
It's hard to say because one, you know, they're not making him out to be like he's, you know, put on wear and tear. You know what I mean? Because right. Because of the super soldier serum, he's kind of recuperated. I think the first few issues post Dimension Z, they did do that, but you know, they're probably going to sprinkle that in here and there. This issue was definitely more about Cap and relating to Nuke. You know, that, like I said, that was kind of an interesting take on the Nuke character, and I thought it was fairly well done.
Okay. What do you got for us, Dirt?
We will go to George Romero's Empire of the Dead.
Ooh.
And the basic premise of this is, you know, the zombie apocalypse has happened. Some time has passed. New York City has kind of rebolstered itself. There are parts of town that are dangerous, but parts of town that are basically, you know, fine. And what you're following a researcher who is traveling around with a guy who collects zombies and puts them in this arena and lets the zombies, like, basically fight it out or fight against people, like, gladiatorial style.
Zombie combat!
Pretty much. And basically, George Romero, he reworked his original Night of the Living Dead story into this, but he's changed the rules of the zombies, and he basically changed the ending of the movie, and he's changed what it's like to be in the middle of a zombie infestation. So, you know, every zombie movie pretty much up until, like, what, 28 days later, was following that original Night of the Living Dead lead. And then the last, you know, decade, we've had all these explorations into different things, and he is basically coming back with a new idea where the zombies, they come back from the dead, but they remember certain aspects of being alive. So, like, for instance, there's a zombie shopkeeper who's been zombified, and he's out in front of a store sweeping the sidewalk because that's what he did every day in his regular life.
Mm.
So as a zombie, he kind of shuffles out and picks up a broom and just starts sweeping because that's what he knows how to do. So the zombies maintain like a certain level of intellect and a certain level of recognition, and he replays part of the original Night of the Living Dead story where this researcher, you find out, is the sister of Barbara, who was in the original movie, who watches her brother get killed, and she runs to the farmhouse, and she finds all the people hiding out. and he changes that story so that the brother, when he's zombified, he actually breaks in and grabs Barbara and drags her out of the house and basically drags her out to the barn, and she's, you know, yelling at him like, I'm your sister, you can't do this to me, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And the zombie looks at her and there's this sense of recognition on his face. Like, he's dragged her out of the house because she's not meat, she's family. He's protecting her. And so the whole nature of the relationship between the humans and the living dead changes. So now there's like this greater question of morality. Like, you know, do you actually kill them like brainless animals, or do you try to rehabilitate them and, you know, somehow, you know, figure a way to interject them into society? And
it's like we're out on Herschel's farm.
There's actually there's some neat concepts higher up in the story. The problem is his base story. The issue, you find out that not only are there zombies, but somehow vampires are real in this universe. And if you look at the cover, you can see that there are bite marks on the neck of this zombie. Because in this storyline, you find out that there are vampires as well. The vampires are feeding off the humans. So now there's going to be this zombie vampire human war. Something is going to break out. And like everything seems, it seems like a very interesting idea. And the fact that he's changed the human zombie relationship is very interesting. You kind of want to see how this plays out. And then suddenly you're like, oh, vampires.
Yeah.
Like it just, it.
Like they're thrown in as a monkey wrench.
It's like the issue jumps the shark before the issue's even over. Oh, you know?
You think?
You get to that point, you're just like, oh my gosh. And the guy who's the vampire is just so B movie villain, just I terrible. I want
to suck your blood. Is that really is?
Not so much that, but more of like the goth nerd. Wears a cape and I don't know. I kind of block his character out of my mind because that's like the worst part. The one thing that brings it down, if the whole zombie thing wasn't part of the storyline, I think it would have been a really good issue. But as soon as that zombie appears and starts sucking this girl's blood, and you're just like, oh,
the vampire.
Oh yeah, the vampire. As soon as the vampire appears. You know, there was a great story there, and then they just decided.
No, but if you think about it, right? If vampires did exist during a zombie apocalypse, they would be kind of, you know, they would be kind of panicked because their food supply would be dwindling as the human race zombified.
Yeah, and they've done that. They've done that before.
Oh, they have?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I guess it's not so original.
In fact, IDW did a series a couple years ago just called. Was it Zombies versus Vampires? I think it's
God.
Vampires versus Zombies. Is this
better than Walking Dead?
No. No. Like I said, it was actually pretty good up to a point. And then it just hits that point.
Until they put vampires in it.
And then it becomes a Fox network event instead of a great classic horror movie, you know?
That's
fine. Okay. So is it my go again?
I believe so.
It is. Yeah, go ahead.
Since Roddy Cat was bugging me on Twitter to get to this book.
Oh, no.
Deadly Class number one, or as he coined it, Five Morning Glory's Weapons.
Oh, no.
He took five weapons and Morning Glories together, matching together to create Deadly Class. There's too many deadlies. There's too many image books with deadly and pretty and
dead weapons. Body class.
Yeah.
Hey, it could be worse. It could be blood. Remember that in the early 90s?
It's like trying to keep straight all news from Marvel. But let's see. So Deadly Class deals with a homeless teenager named Marcus. And the setting is actually in 1987, I believe, is the year. And you sort of follow Marcus throughout each month or a couple months throughout the year as he's you sort of experience his life, living on the streets and his struggle. You get some glimpses into his past and I guess how he came to be on the streets. You see his family. And then as his story progresses, for some reason, the police are interested in him.
He gets paranoid. He thinks that people are following him and watching him.
Oh, is that what that was supposed to have been?
Yeah, because like there's points where he's like looking at the roof of the building. He's like, someone is watching me. I can feel it.
But that didn't explain why the police were like trying to shoot him and kill him.
No, and that's the thing. Like you wrote a review of this book and you actually really liked it. And so I read this and I'm trying to figure out which book you read because the book I read was not good. I mean, you've got this whiny homeless kid whose biggest problem is the fact that he blames everyone else for his problems, including his own homelessness. It's his own decision, and yet for some reason it's everyone else's fault. And he, for no reason whatsoever, the cops decide to come at him, and they start chasing him and trying to shoot him and kill him. And all these other people are suddenly standing around going, okay, it's a setup, it's a trap, watch out. He goes, huh? And then the cops start shooting, what? And then he sees somebody, I better follow them. And quick, hop on this motorcycle, let's go. And then they have this crazy chase. And then he goes and meets this these weird people that take him down to the basement of some building. And he doesn't even know where he's at because there's a sack on his head. And there's a little crazy old man who runs this giant building underground where he's going to teach them how to be assassins. And like, I'm just... like none of these characters were likable. You know, nothing is really relatable for being like one of these stories where it's all about teenagers trying to find their way. This kid is like the biggest crybaby about everything. And I got to the end of this book and I'm just like, who cares?
Something else that would have made, I'm sure they'll explain it later, but why do they think he has what it takes to be an assassin? That's something else that was missing from the story.
Yeah, they make these little hints like, well, if what they say is true about him, you know, if what the old man says is true, then he must be the one or something. So there's something about him that makes him special.
He's Neo.
But, I mean, but yeah, again, like out of nowhere, the cops just come chasing after him. And maybe they'll explain that at some point in the future. But it's just one of those things where you're reading it here and you're going, you know, you flip a page and you kind of go back to the previous page. Mm-hmm. You're like, wait, what? Because there's a guy walking past him. The guy on the cover with the cornrows is just walking past him. He goes, it's a sting. And he just says that. And like the kid's not paying any attention. It's a word balloon that comes out of nowhere. He's just kind of like, huh, what? And then all the cops come chasing after him. It's like, wait, why are these cops looking for him? How do they know he's going to be there? He's only there because he was following the girl. So were they watching the girl in order to find him, or have they just been tailing him forever for no reason? Like, it's just, there's so much stuff where it doesn't make sense, and it doesn't really feel like, you don't know if this is ever going to lead to something that explains all of these stupid little things, or if all these stupid little things are just, you know, to move the story along. And like his family dies because a suicidal woman jumps off a bridge and lands on them. And like somehow this event shapes his life. And it's like,
I love how this is just going on. I'm like, wow.
Makes you want to read it, huh?
He's not so much. Me, I'm like rubbing the bald spots on my forehead, like trying to get my brain to process this information because I just can't.
That's, I can tell you what I liked about it.
What?
One, I'm always a sucker for teenage team stories, especially if there's like powers involved.
Demographic.
Huh?
You're part of that CW demographic.
Yes. So that's one. Number two, I like it because it takes place in
he does watch Arrow.
It takes place in the real world. Yes, I know that the real world doesn't have schools for assassins or whatnot, but at least it's based in the real world. So there's something I can relate to, a part of it I can relate to. Like story, like books like I'll use Pretty Deadly as the example. That makes no sense to me. I don't know what's going on in that book. So even though it's a Western fairy tale story or something, that I don't know, that just it doesn't seem real world-ish like Deadly Class does. Number three, the art was nice. I had never heard of Wesley Craig before, but I really did enjoy his art. I liked he did a lot of different things with the panel layout. So, and it, for once, it was what he did didn't distract me from the story. It actually made me enjoy it more. Even with all the stuff that all the fine points that Dirt just mentioned a couple minutes ago, that all that is true, but yet I still enjoyed it.
And I guess here's another problem I had is Rick Remender puts a letter in the back of the book, and he talks about how he moved around a lot as a kid and he didn't fit in a lot of places and, you know, whatever. And at one point he talks about how he was always being picked on by the jocks and the rednecks and I think he says the hillbillies, I don't remember, whatever. And then later on, he talks about how wrong it is to put people in to pigeonhole people into these different personality types. And when you see someone who's the punk rocker or see someone who's the goth person or see someone who's whatever, those are real people. Those aren't just, you know, character tropes or whatever.
And jocks.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you just did that. And now you're talking about how people shouldn't do that, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? We can do that to the hillbillies, rednecks, and jocks.
They pick on people.
That's right.
Make people feel bad.
Oh yeah, no one's ever made fun of a redneck. or called a jock stupid. That's never happened.
Roddy Cat said he is watching. Hopefully he'll chime in on social media to let us know what his thoughts were.
Cool.
But yeah, this is a thumbs down for Deadly Class for me.
All right. I'm going to have to take a look at it now because we have such polarizing and different opinions.
It's splitting the comic book chronicles down the middle. Choose your sides.
This is like half the movies. Like it's Siskel a gives it a thumbs up. Ebert gives it a thumbs down.
Oh, that's funny.
Haha, they can see my thumbs up and not yours. Ah! Not your thumbs down.
Hey, you know what?
Ignore that.
That's funny. I'm gonna have to read this now, gentlemen. Okay. All right. So no, whose turn is it? Mine
don't.
Again?
No, you don't.
Yeah, and you can actually combine a couple of yours together if you want to.
All right. Let's
out the way.
You want to move things along? I see.
Well, you don't have to do everything.
That's another point. You don't have to speak on every book you read.
Yeah, because I've read a bunch this week as opposed to some other weeks. Let me hit. You know what I didn't put on my list, and I'm going to mention it because I was kind of struck by the direction the X books are going post Battle of the Atom was Wolverine and the X Men number 40, I think it was.
Okay.
And I didn't put it in my list, but I definitely did read it. This story revolves around Wolverine and Cyclops sort of healing the schism. We don't know if it's completely resolved, but the smile on Wolverine's face at the end of the book, spoiler alert, leads me to believe that the schism has been healed. Something else that's actually not on my list, I'm going to hit another X book, is the all-new X-Men number. What number is it? The
22.now.
22.now. 22.now. The beginning of the trial of Jean Grey.
Yeah, I wanted to read this. I haven't had the chance to get to it yet.
All right. I will not spoil too much.
Oh, and, I mean, go ahead. I mean, you're not
going to. No, I won't spoil too much. Anyway. No, I mean, the point is, you know, drama with spacefaring folks in this issue. You know, you can kind of guess, that it has something to do with Jean Grey and the Jean Grey that we knew and you know, the wielder of the Phoenix Force, there's some stuff going on. So the wheels are set in motion for a spacefaring story, and you know, we get a last panel, last page reveal. But we all know this book is being crossed over with the other Bendis book, right?
Yep.
Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's no big surprise that they make an appearance in this book. So that's not really a spoiler.
Yeah, well, they're on the cover.
Right. So ultimately, you know, this gets the sort of story moving. It's like I said, it's kind of interesting to see where the X-Men are going post-Battle of the Atom.
Does Angela make any sense in the storyline?
Might have to wait till next week.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Exactly.
Huh.
But at the end of the day, if you think about it, you know, not knowing anything about Angela from the Image books, all she is a new character to add into the dynamics of the Guardians of the Galaxy team, because we've seen this particular incarnation of the Guardians of the Galaxy kind of stay intact for the most part. And, you know, it doesn't hurt to throw a wrench into the team dynamics. You know, that's my opinion. If you think about it, what was it? Was it the Advent and Landing series where they were on the space station?
I'm still reading that series, actually.
Okay, I won't spoil.
I mean, I haven't read it in since last year sometime, so.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't want to spoil. It's actually pretty good. So
I'm going to try to get to it. Maybe I'll actually get to it before the movie comes out.
There you go. All right, so in terms of those are the two X books I read. I did not get to, was it X-Men number 9 came out this week?
Yes.
I did not get to that. So I combined those two X books. You know what? Let me throw in a third X book. Origin number 2. Very quickly, we get an appearance from Mr. Nathaniel Essex, who's hinted at on the cover of the first Origin, and you know, things move on from there. There's not that much that happens in this book. It only slightly develops what happened in the first issue, but we do get to see an appearance by Nathaniel Essex. And if you don't know who that is, Google it. For longtime X-Men fans, you'll know who I'm talking. So that's it. Look at that. 3-1.
There you go. That's the way to do it. Let's see.
I thought the way to do it was to get your money for nothing and your chicks for free. That was the way to do it. All right. I'll throw a couple DC books together then. We will start with Supergirl. Supergirl 27. This is continuing the new Lobo. Being on Earth.
Lord. Is he still skinny? Kind of hipster?
Yeah, well, this new Lobo is trying to track down the Lobo that everybody knows, because that Lobo is a fake who has stolen this guy's identity. And so he's a narcissist, and he's trying to get his name back. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, all the stuff with Lobo is just kind of there, I think, as a vehicle to show Supergirl getting enraged, because as we know, she's going to be joining the Red Lanterns at some point in the near future.
And spewing every time she gets mad.
Basically, what has happened in the Supergirl books is she got kryptonite poisoning. She thought she was going to die, so she went into space, exiled herself from Earth and just went into space, and got caught in this big time vortex thing and went back to Krypton in the past. And of course, in Krypton in the past, it was the Red Sun, so she was losing her powers.
Oh, this is the whole bit with her L.
Yeah, and so all of that whole storyline. So she comes back, you know, to the present time, whatever. She's back under the Yellow Sun, and her powers are starting to come back, but she's never gone through the whole process of the powers losing and then coming back. So she's unsure of what her power level is. So she's getting angry. And Lobo comes and attacks her. She gets mad and she throws this massive punch and appears to snap his neck and kill him. And so she's a little freaked out by the fact that she can't control her powers now. And she's starting to, you know, doubt her ability to be a superhero, but at the same time, it's like everything that she's gone through in the past, you know, year, they've kept doing storyline after storyline where, you know, she meets a boy, she falls in love, he turns out to be a weirdo, she has to kill him, she gets poisoned, she gets Krypton back, but it was all a lie, and so, you know, like all of this stuff has just basically made her crazy. And so now she's finding herself, you know, I mean, it's like typical woman, you know, emotions start to get out of control. Chicks, man, chicks, I'm telling you.
I was going after the bling.
But it at least, like, you can see how it's starting to lead into her becoming a Red Lantern. Like, it's starting to make sense how this is going to work out, like, the way that she is getting enraged and the way that she's losing control and the way that she's just kind of pissed off. How she actually becomes a Red Lantern, I don't know, but you can see.
I will mention that in the, in, I think, a week or two ago's issue of Red Lanterns, I think a lot of red rings start searching out new ring bearers, so maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah. You can see how that's starting to fit. So I like how it's foreshadowing that, how you can see things starting to come together. The other book we'll talk about right now, Batman 27. This is still part of Zero Year. And this is him taking on the Riddler.
For most of the issue.
Well, he's taking on the Riddler's machinations, I guess we'll say. This issue is really about Batman and Commissioner Gordon.
I think it's a relationship issue between talking about Batman and Gordon and Batman and Alfred.
Well, yeah. I mean, Alfred talks about him and the way he treats anybody who tries to help him, which I think, you know, does lead into that whole way that Alfred becomes basically his sidekick for a long time until a Robin comes along.
Right.
This does tell why Gordon trusts Batman and how Bruce Wayne, not as Batman, but Bruce Wayne as the child, plays into that storyline.
Yes.
And I do like the way, you know, that's one thing Snyder has been doing with the Bat books. His Batman storyline is, since he can play around with the origin, he's doing a lot more of tying these characters together. Whereas, you know, in the past, they had a Batman character, and then they had some other characters, and then they'd eventually realize some way to have these guys have some sort of, you know, connection, but it all kind of came after the fact, whereas now he's...
Yeah, as a way to tighten it up.
Yeah, so it makes a lot more sense, and you do see who Gordon is and why Gordon is the good guy that doesn't trust, you know, his own cops, and where all that comes from and how he, you know, holds himself to a higher moral standard. That kind of comes out in this, why he trusts Batman so implicitly when no one else does. And then you do get the Riddler in this, you know, version of the DC universe. He's much more than just this guy who, you know, has a skywriter put a riddle in the sky and, you know. What has eyes but cannot see? It must be a potato. Let's go to the potato farm, Batman. You know, it's a lot more than that kind of stuff. You know, he's much more devious and diabolical. And
he did have that best, you know, like that what I'm humming, you know, the ditty that I'm kind of singing or humming along is straight from the 66 Batman. You know, the Riddler sound effect was actually pretty cool. I always dug it when they played it.
And the one thing I like about this too is Batman as the detective is always trying to, you know, follow the clues and, you know, figure out the mystery, whatever. Dark Knight Detective is, you know, part of who his story is supposed to be, but most of the time he's just a guy that, you know, punches bad guys and whatever. And this plays into the Riddler being a guy who likes games and likes puzzles, is actually using the fact that he knows Batman is going to figure out certain clues as a way to put in other traps, you know? So it's like Batman figures it out, but Riddler knows that Batman's going to figure it out, and he knows how Batman's going to figure it out. You know what I mean? So that shows Riddler as being this much more, you know, devious and intelligent character. So thumbs up for Batman 27.
Cool.
Nice. So you're enjoying Zero Year, I take it.
I am. Like, I'm actually contemplating when Zero Year gets collected into a book, I might just go ahead and buy the book.
The trade.
Yeah, the trade, just to have it on my shelf and to pull it out and read it every so often, because I really do like what they've done.
I might do that. I bought the trade for Death of the Family. Still haven't read it yet. I don't know.
I was about to say, I think I'm going to, you know, obviously Zero Year is still, you know, moving forward, but I was not that big a fan of Death in the Family. Or Death of the Family so much. I find myself agreeing with Dirt. I do like where the Zero Year, you know, kind of retelling of the first year of Batman's activity is going. So I'm willing to wait this out to see if it's worth getting in a collected form.
You know, I didn't like Death of the Family that much either.
Right.
But now that you mention it and you bring it up, part of the whole point of Death of the Family was that he did keep everyone else at arm's length, even though they were supposed to be his friends. You know, they were, you know, quote unquote, the Bat family.
Right.
And he didn't trust them with certain information. And that's the point of Alfred's whole speech here in Zero Year. So I have to think that somehow it's going to circle back.
No, that's the way Snyder works. You're probably right.
But yeah, I didn't even think about that until right now when you bring up Death of the Family, that we're seeing here how Alfred's saying that that's, you know, something he's got to worry about. And we've already seen that happen in that past storyline. So I got to think somehow it's got to come full circle.
Sure. It's always been a running theme in the Bat books, though, you know?
Yeah, but never, you know, slapped in the face. Well, or the way this has been so upfront about it.
Right.
Okay. Let me knock some of mine out. Let's see.
My Little Pony. You read My Little Pony?
Hmm.
Ha!
There's a lot. Listen, there's a lot of stuff out this week. That's why my list is so long.
For X books, I only got to All New X Factor number 2 and All New X Men 22. Point now.
How's X Factor?
X Factor 2. That's one of my new favorite X Men books, I believe.
Nice.
Yeah. First time I never read X Factor, so this is my first time really jumping into a Peter David book in a while. I like this trio of mutants, Polaris, Quicksilver, and Gambit for now until 3 more future members join. In this issue, they're taking on, I guess, an AIM scientist, and AIM also plays a part in some other books, aka Avengers number 25.
Yep.
Which I wasn't too crazy about this book, just because in this and in Avengers World number 2, the big villain is AIM, who I don't respect as a antagonist. I don't care if they have their own island. I just don't care. I don't care about a bunch of scientists doing stuff. And unless there's a big climax to Marvel building up AIM the way they have since last year, I just won't care about stories that feature them, which Nick Spencer seems to like focusing on so far. And the whole original X-Men, original Avengers from the past, to it than that.
Yeah.
especially if you've been reading New Avengers,
mm-hmm.
You might can guess what's going on here.
That's right.
So, yeah. To that,
it's definitely not a straight rip on the, you know, on All New X-Men.
Which, of course, I understand. You know, you don't want to just use the same as that story. You got to make it your own. But, yeah.
Well, is this the Crime Avengers from Earth 3?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. But definitely, if you're familiar with what's going on in New Avengers, you get the gist. And it's, you know, it's definitely interwoven Hickman mumbo jumbo.
Yes. Anything else worth mentioning?
Well, and you read Avengers World number 2?
Avengers World number 2. That I did like. Well, I was going to say I liked that it featured Cannonball and Sunspot, but it didn't really. It mm-hmm. did feature Smasher, who I enjoy.
That's good.
I want to see more Smasher. I wouldn't mind if she had a solo book.
A solo? Well, maybe a limited series.
Yeah, I take
think
that.
She could, yeah, I was about to say, you think she could support a solo book? I don't know about that yet.
Oh, never mind. I was going to say, can Black Widow support a solo book?
Well, we'll wait to see what the sales numbers
are. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I was going to say, I didn't read number two this week.
I was going to, and I was just like,
this is so much to read. You know, like, there was just so much to read since the other day, so it's impossible to get it all in.
Whose
turn is it?
We can be done.
I was going to say, you want to throw out clicks of the week?
Yeah, I was going to say clicks of the week time.
Actually, wait a minute. I want to throw out one thing real quick.
Go ahead and throw that book out.
What?
The one you said yes.
No, I won't do that one.
Okay.
All right, but one of the things, I've been trying to catch up on Transformers for a long time, and I've finally given up on trying to catch up because I'm not going to be able to read everything to get caught up, but right now there is a storyline going on called Dark Cybertron, which if you've been following Transformers at all, they had two different series. They have More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise. Two different series. They're happening in two different parts of the universe, unconnected to each other other than the fact that they're Transformers. Well, what they're doing with this Dark Cybertron is they're bringing the two series back together and they're doing this crossover. And I finally decided that since I can't, I just don't have the time to go back and read all those old ones, I'm going to start with Dark Cybertron. This is chapter one. Chapter seven just came out this week, and I've got the issues here. I'm actually going to sit down this weekend and I'm going to read the Dark Cybertron story and jump ahead to this. And so then from this point on, I can be current with the Transformers books. So this is my homework for this weekend, is to sit down and read through all of these Transformers.
Okay.
Since we're talking about books, we're catching up on last week. I did finally start back reading Invincible again. So I'm up to issue 25.
Yeah. Oh, all the way up to 25.
Almost one quarter of the way through the book, the series.
Yeah. You only have like 82 issues to go.
I figure if I read at least maybe like two or three issues a week, that's not too bad.
That's a good pace.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to hurt yourself.
Real quick, I wanted to mention before we did Clicks of the Week, I did not get a chance to finish reading it because we went on the air, but I started Hacktivist number one, and the only reason I progressed past the first page is that I saw that this is an idea from Alyssa Milano. So Alyssa Milano, what's up? I wanted to say that we...
Is this your way of flirting? Because I don't think you got it quite right.
Come on over to the Comic Book Chronicles.
That's right. We will interview you and promo your book on the Comic Book Chronicles right here.
So your way of getting her attention is telling her that you haven't finished her book yet.
Well, only because this is such a busy week. Well, I think what we should do is dedicate an episode to this book because I did like the art and I did like where the story was going. I basically got halfway through before we got on the air, and I just did not have the advanced knowledge was the one who created this book.
You should have made it a priority to get to this first thing Wednesday morning.
I should have, and I regret not doing so. So ultimately, it's on me. And I think what we're going to do after the show is tweet, maybe, and hash, and throw in this tweet and say, look, we're trying to finish reading this, or maybe tweet it for next week and have a full review next week. So that's that. So what's up, Alyssa Milano?
My click of the week would be the book that Dirt dissed earlier.
Ooh.
Deadly Class number one. For all the reasons I stated earlier.
That's funny.
Terrible.
All right. So you got a click of the week or should I go?
Go ahead and go. I'm still thinking.
My click of the week is a book we never even talked about. Believe it or not, it's the finale to the Future Foundation, this incarnation of the Future Foundation, FF number 16. I actually found myself we were having a Twitter discussion, was it yesterday, last night, about this book. I had just finished reading it, and it was actually, I found myself enjoying the way they were just developing Scott Lang as a character and how they were wrapping up the Future Foundation story. I've definitely liked the Future Foundation kids, you know, the way Hickman wrote them and the way Fraction ended up kind of developing them afterwards. It's funny how Tim is a big fan of the teen heroes that I guess that he grew up with, like New Warriors and the most recent incarnations of the Teen Titans. But I happen to be enjoying some of these younger characters that Marvel is throwing out there and redeveloping, especially the Future Foundation characters. I just think they're well written, they're smart, and the humor is top notch. So, you know, I've enjoyed that, and I thought that this issue was a great send off for the characters and for this incarnation of the Future Foundation. You know, it's definitely. I think Tim tweeted that this book was up my alley more so than either of you guys. So, you know, it did hit, you know, kind of a, it fell into a sweet spot for me. So, you know, this would be my click of the week this week. I'm disappointed. Well, I'm hopeful that they carry on the characters in another form somewhere. I really like some of these young characters that they were trying to develop, you know, with the Future Foundation. And Scott Lang, too, I thought they did pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah, give it a read, Dirt. You know, it's not gonna, it's actually, you know, you don't have to, because I haven't read it, like many of the previous issues. You know, I think I've been off the FF bandwagon for, you know, at least 4 or 5 issues. So I don't think I've read much recently, maybe 2, like 3 or 4 months ago. So.
I may just flip through it, but I won't even hold myself to that.
All right.
I don't know. The Fantastic Four, they just never appealed to me. So.
Well, Fantastic Four 16 was pretty rough. That was a tough read. This one's much more enjoyable.
I loved the last incarnation of Fantastic Four, but the Marvel Now Fantastic Four, I've absolutely hated.
Yes.
So I gave up on FF the same time I gave up on Fantastic Four. So I'll at least read it just to see how it wraps up. But I'm not real enthusiastic about the idea.
Gotcha. But like I said, you know, for me, it's the characters that I've grown to enjoy. And, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't really care about Medusa and Darla Deering and, She-Hulk so much. I know She-Hulk's getting her own series, but you know, it's the Foundation kids that I found, you know, just fun to read, and I'm hoping that they move on into another book.
All right, I hate repeating myself, but I'm gonna have to do it. This week, pick of the week, click of the week, Walking Dead 120.
Yeah.
Another chapter in All Out War. It's like I keep telling myself I'm not going to pick Walking Dead. I have to give something else a shot. But every time an issue comes out, it's like the first thing I read as soon as it's available. And I'm always engrossed by it. And I always get to the end of it. And it's always one of those things where the book is so unfair on so many levels that I'm always reading the book and imagining, like, well, if I was in that situation, I'd try to, you know, do this. I'd try to, you know, it's like I'm always trying to strategize myself because I'm so drawn into the storyline. Issue 120, you know, this war has been raging between the different groups, and this is very similar in tone to what happened in the infamous Walking Dead issue 48. When the governor attacks the prison, basically what you saw as the season 3, what I guess it was the mid-season finale that we just had a month or so ago.
I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, well, I won't. Yeah, but it happened 5 years ago in the comics.
All right,
I
mean, fine.
Come on. But still, it's very similar in tone to what happens there, where before, in the issues leading up to this, the different groups were fighting against each other, but you always kind of had the sense, well, one side will win, one side will lose, and things will kind of go back to normal. And this is the issue where it's kind of clear that nothing's going to be the same again. Like, this is another point in the story where things are going to have to change because of what is happening in this fight. I don't want to spoil it. Like, I don't want to say what it is. Like, I don't want to give it away. But this is the midpoint of the story. This is part 6 of 12. So we're only in the middle of it. But such a drastic, dramatic change happens in this where it doesn't hit you in the face that the whole thing has changed. But when you get to the end of the book, you realize that it can never go back to what it was before. So now it's like it feels like all bets are off the table. Now they really have to see this thing through to the end. And it's, if more people die, then that's just going to have to happen because it's going to have to be resolved one way or another. So, again,
they die.
It grabs you. And, when I'm done reading it, I wanted to read it again. And it's one of those things that, it just stuck with me ever since I read it. So I have to go with Walking Dead again.
All right.
Oh, and Radicat said,
as you bow to the Robert Kirkman statue behind me.
Yeah, and I'm not proud of it.
Radicat says, Mighty Avengers number 5 could have been his click of the week based on the cover alone. He hasn't read it, though.
Oh, interesting.
All right. That should do it for tonight's episode. I want to thank everyone for tuning in live tonight, or if you're watching on the replay or listening on the audio replay, make sure to follow us on our Twitter accounts and social media accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at TheNation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And also check out his website, popculturenetwork.com. And Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Yeah.
There you go.
So with that said, we'll catch you next Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for another Comic Book Chronicles. And we are signing off.
Peace. We'll